times when you look at things like Confucius and some of those Eastern philosophers and stuff like that. That looks so much that it's been passed down to their own
talk about.
And then so much of the history we have is because
so long we're on that train.
Fantastic enough that we.
There we are.
Roger, how you doing?
Welcome back to another episode of the Joe and Doug Show. We're pumped that you're with us. It's going to be a good one today. Now, we were supposed to talk all things NFTs, but we're not in a place quite yet where we can do that. Joe's doing some of the backside analytics and how to do that, and we're just not quite ready to go into it yet. So we don't
have some visuals that make or break this, and I just couldn't get it together fast enough.
No, it's all good. So sometime next week, either Tuesday or Thursday, we'll hit it. And those of you that are watching specifically for the NFT thing, you'll have to check back with us. But we didn't want to present halfway. So that would have been terrible.
We're putting it.
Yeah.
I like it.
So Joe's day was good. Joe was businessing today.
So this felt like a real day. This felt like the stuff that you used to do 2 years ago, like working on your stuff. And, you know, it's just so much. We're back to normal is what I'm getting at.
You love being back to normal.
I do.
I like a normal day every once in a while, but I like to break it up with something fresh or new. And part of that's I rotate books in, or I'll rotate meetings with people I wouldn't normally meet with on a routine basis. Just helps keep it fresh for me. Do you like the routine of?
Well, it all felt sort of like magical before. Like everything was such in the clouds and nothing made sense and the math never added up. And it was just so much elasticity where everything was. Didn't feel real. Today like felt like a real day. It got me grounded again.
Oh, okay, fair enough. We had an Apple product crisis at my house today. My wife Insta-storied a little bit of it, but she went to the gym this morning, which she's been very faithful with that. And she turned on her phone and all of her Apple Music was gone. She was like, I don't have any of my music. How am I supposed to get on a treadmill? I don't have any of my music. And she came home. She was very frustrated. I mean, like threw her morning for a loop. And I was like, okay, what do you want me to do? And we're on a family sharing thing. So I went in on the back end of mine. I'm like, it says that you should have it. On hers, it said that she should have it, but it wasn't showing up in the app. So finally, I don't know, midday sometime, lunchtime probably, she goes, well, how are we supposed to do this? I'm like, and my mother-in-law was like, well, we'll just call Apple. And I was like, she spent 40 minutes on the phone with Apple. Now, Apple was fantastic on the phone, had multiple people working through it, and ultimately was able to get her back on to Apple Music, and her music was restored, and all is right in the world. But she took a nice survey for them because she very much appreciated the customer service, and they were just, oh, we're so sorry about this, and just going above and beyond. And the guy was like, I have four other people working on this with me. Oh, just give me 1 second. Let me put you on mute. You know, is it this? No. Okay, that's all in place. All right. But they were troubleshooting this thing for 30 minutes, and then they put his supervisor on, and then she was able to figure it out. I don't know exactly.
Well, 40 minutes is like rocket ship. I mean, I hear horror stories of 4 hours of wasting an entire afternoon. So usually when it's like, please call support, I'll just throw it away and buy another one and just start over from scratch rather than enter into that labyrinth.
Well, you guys do support, so you have to deal with people's crap that doesn't work.
All the time, yeah.
And so what do you have, like, it has to be fixed in 20 minutes? Do you have, like, quotas that you try and hit? What's your... what are you looking at in terms of KPI?
We're on hourly. So we have to make sure we're giving good value. So if it's something that we, you know, might take a really long time, you know, a lot of times when we have to work with an outside vendor that you can go, you know, where we try to keep everything within an hour package and done. We're very unique in that sense.
Yeah. Cause like you were saying, most customer service can take hours. And so I was impressed that it was 40 minutes and they were so attentive, and it wasn't, like, sometimes you call customer service and they're like bothered that you called. And I'm like, by the way, I pay for your product, so like make it work. And they're like, ugh, I was in here building my time machine. You interrupted me and I guess I'll fix your problem. And, you know, so as a tech person, you either have that side of it in the customer service end, or you have the person that's like, they're so lofty. I don't know if you've ever dealt with tech people. Like, they start talking about gigabytes and all sorts of stuff, and, you know, grandma's on the other phone going, I have no idea what you're talking about. I just know that my screen is black. Like, well, you know, ma'am, if you would, you know, take the roto driver. And she's like, I have no idea what that is.
So the way that this works is that when you release a product like this, mm-hmm. you have the total number of people who own the product, and you have a percentage of people who are going to need help with it. So they contract outer layer, like cover fire insulators. Their sole job is to make most of the people not make it to the actual support line. So I don't know, some of the companies like just try to solve it for you. They're non-technical people, but they're right. following like a bullet points list, and maybe that gets rid of you. Some of them like just act stupid, so you hang up, and they're fulfilling their obligation to get rid of most of the people who call that don't make it to the actual tech support lines.
Interesting.
So if you just call in that first ring place and try to get to the second tier, and you can bypass all that frustration.
Yeah. The number one thing to say when you're calling for customer service is if they are giving you any bit of the runaround or the slow, just customer attention. I'll just move my, and customer attention has this magic wand somehow. It does. You know, you're talking to, you know, Joe, who's making, you know, $12 an hour trying to fix your phone. And you say customer retention, you know, all of a sudden, let me transfer you over. I'm so sorry that I wasn't able to fix your problem. What's the problem? The problem is that guy was giving me the runaround. Here's my issue. I need you to fix it. If you're not going to fix it, I'll go somewhere else.
So to answer your question, yes, that's their sole obligation. And once you know that, how the game is played, I'm not like kind to that person. So I almost halfway feel bad that this is a human being on the other line, but well, I'm not playing the game.
Half of it's a robot.
For sure. Yeah.
That's so frustrating. Like I can understand in complete sentences. And then you're talking and they're like, no, that's not what I want.
Yeah.
So frustrating. I think where we'll kind of go today, just give kind of a preview of the NFT thing that we'll do next week, a little teaser, a couple minutes. So what are we going to make? What are we going to put it on? And what's the plan? We're going to sell it.
So we're going to take a portion of the previous show. We're going to encapsulate it so that it is a sort of like, we're going to sell the show. Like that show is going to, can be owned by another human being. And so the way that it is a trust authority. We're talking a while, the mm-hmm. principles of a culture is that we don't trust our government. We don't trust each other. We don't trust any institutions. So the level of trust is that erodes is that you really can't do transactions with other people when you don't have trust. So when you're establishing an objective trust authority, you're basically lodging something that you don't have to make a case about, right? Your house is yours. And you would think that it's yours until the government starts like rejecting your taxes and taking possession of everybody's homes because they want to build a highway, right? Well, now you don't trust that was really your home. If when you said, yeah, I don't want to sell it, somebody said, well, too bad, you're going to sell it. Now it's no longer your house.
Yeah, yeah.
But a trust authority means that if I have this money in like a Bitcoin wallet, you can't take it no matter how hard you scream. If I send it to you, I can send it to you. But you can't take it against my will. And that's where you don't have a third-party trust authority. I mean, it can't be overwritten. So if Apple says, I'm going to put a passcode on it to keep this safe, right? Mm-hmm. And you put a passcode on it, and then somehow Apple is able to like undo your passcode and get in there anyway. Well, then I don't trust the passcode because it really wasn't a passcode. Yeah. But if I call one day and say, I don't have my passcode, and they're like, hey, sorry, we can't help you out. Like, I have trust in it because even I couldn't open it up without that passcode.
No, that's really good. Trust is a huge piece in our culture today. You know, when you think about trust, it's eroded at every level. But trust, it's why there's so many conspiracy theories out there. We've done those conspiracy theory shows.
Let's do one. I want to do some conspiracies.
So there's a comedian on, I'm sure he's elsewhere, but I found him on TikTok, and he does this bit, and he says, you know, I don't trust people or talk to people that don't believe in conspiracy theories. And you know, he makes that statement, and he says, you know, I mean, you really don't believe in any conspiracy theories. And you know, he puts it out there like that, and he goes, you just think the government's out there batting 1,000 telling you the truth. He's like, not even one. He's like, that's a strong stance to take. He goes, they're in charge of all these people. He goes, I'm in charge of one person. I lie to him every day. it's ha-ha, but, you know, the truth in that is it's kind of wild.
All right, well, let's take some better-known ones, and we'll just throw them out there as fodder and see how you feel about them. You ready? Mm-hmm. All right, so first off, chemtrails in airplanes, where the conspiracy is that airplanes are flying over, and they're releasing some kind of either mind-altering or control chemicals, or they're killing people flight out. They're putting chemicals in the air that are doing something either for humans or agriculture or trees or what?
Interesting.
Would they do that? Should they do that?
I'm sure that conversation's happened around a table at some point, like in a government office at some point. Like, hey, if we put this in the air, it would be better for da 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 da. I mean, you remember the commercials they had for DDT and pesticides and stuff.
Yeah.
All the kids at the picnic table eating lunch and like DDT is perfectly safe for right. the kids. And now everybody's, you know, dying from all these horrible things due to pesticides and all this stuff. So I would say that something like that certainly is probable. I certainly think normal airplanes have exhaust and other stuff that they put out, but whether the government's putting some sort of intentional chemical in there to alter certain things, why not?
All right. Chemicals in the water where they're feeding the same kind of thing as the chemtrail.
Do you buy the chemtrail stuff?
The chemtrails? No. No. Yeah. When you look out at a blue sky uh-huh. and there's airplanes at that altitude,
right.
you get condensation off of like the temperatures between the exhaust on a jet engine and the temperature of the surrounding air, and you get instant condensation. Little clouds are going out there.
Sure.
There are much better ways if you want to blanket the earth. And people don't realize like how much
vast.
Vacant space yeah. is there. Like even if you put really toxic chemicals at that altitude, there's no way that they reach the ground at any density that could actually hurt somebody. So you're really yeah. wasting your time.
Interesting.
All right.
So water,
yeah.
Poison the water system.
Poison the water system.
I mean, they did in Flint. I mean, you look at some of that stuff. Now, was that intentional, unintentional? Was that incompetence? Was that negligence? I mean, we get into that sort of conversation. But it certainly happened throughout history. There's plenty of historical examples. So, you know, I don't see, you know, and they put fluoride and they put certain things in the water for, you know, to do certain things that are supposed to be good for you, but you know, and then we find out these chemicals are not so great for you.
All right, the one I was asked about yesterday, and it kind of caught me off guard because okay. it was in all sincerity.
The
right?
2020 election?
No, not the 20. That recent injections into your body contain a chemical called graphene.
Okay.
And what could happen is because graphene is sort of like electromagnetic reactive, that if you want to be killed by law enforcement or whatever, you can activate the graphene, stop your heart, stop your brain, kill you.
Hmm. Never heard that one.
It was just That's yesterday. Interesting. And they asked,
and what do you say?
Believe it? And I said, usually when I start on conspiracy theories, I start on evidence based. So if there are a lot of yeah. people like dropping dead from yeah. weird electromagnetic, I was walking by a CT scanner and my head exploded. That then I start looking and say, hey, there's something to this.
Now that would be a sight. I mean, I'm sure it would make the news somewhere.
Yes.
But yeah, I don't know. I don't trust. It's such a fine line because the further you get away from, that's why local is best. You know, we talk about local politics and local community. Like local is best because I know Joe. I know the mayor. I know, like, I see them every day. We live in the same community. And the further out you get with some of this stuff, you know, right now the Supreme Court today denied the OSHA mandate, which was huge and absolutely appropriate. And people should have medical autonomy and freedom over their bodies to decide what goes in it or doesn't go into it. But in that, I think the reason people have an issue with it, like, I wouldn't have a problem if I sat down with my doctor who I've known for 8 years and he said, hey, really think you should do this. And here are the four reasons why. Why? Because I trust him. Like he's taking care of my kids. He's taking care of my wife. He's seen me. He helped us through, you know, sickness and flu and all of that stuff. He's been there. He was there when my father-in-law passed and he took 20 minutes to ask me how I was doing. Like I trust him.
Right.
And so the further you get away from that point of trust creates all sorts of room for people to do because you're just a number on a sheet. And then, yeah, I don't trust the federal government to mandate my health, but I'll sit down with my doctor. If my doctor looked at me and said, hey, I really think it'd be wise for you. You know, I know what's going on here and here health wise. You should probably take this shot or do this thing. I would give that a hard thought because I trust my doctor. I wouldn't go to him if I didn't trust him, but that's built over time. And I think it comes back to that trust factor. Like we were talking about with customer service. Look at me tying that back in. How you like that?
See that? That's good.
and the problem is the further you get away from the source, the easier it is to not to distrust it. So I don't trust Dr. Fauci because I don't know him. Doesn't matter how much they plaster him on the news and everything else. Doesn't matter how much alphabet soup he has after his name. He doesn't live here. He doesn't take care of my, does that make sense?
Yeah. And I think, you know, conspiracy theories are, they're making it into a dirty you know, word where it's almost embarrassing that if you disagree, you agree with them. But the deal is, I think it's a symptom that if you don't trust your surrounding, you're out of control. Mm-hmm. You have to lodge explanations that make, you know, have, even if it's a 1% reasonable shot, like, could they take an airplane and dump a bunch of chemicals in the atmosphere and you trust that they wouldn't do it? I'm kind of on the conspiracy with Aaron Bad Rugger. You phrase it like that.
Yeah.
But you got to look at, you know, like what would be the motive and, you know, what would be they trying to accomplish? And would they really go to that, you know, that extreme? You know, I think there are a ton of bad people surrounding us that we don't know. There are a bunch of people that believe in, you don't have morals and ethics like we do. And they're going around getting away with a bunch of stuff. Yeah. Right. So do I think that we live in systems that protect a lot of those people? Oh, I sure as heck do.
Yeah. Well, but I would rather live in a system that. And it's going to, this shouldn't be controversial, but it will sound controversial. I would rather live in a system that allows a few guilty people to slip through the cracks than puts a few innocent people away. And that whole innocent until proven guilty and our justice system, yes, is supposed to be blind. It's supposed to be fair and all of those things. But so much of the media drives that narrative. I'm watching right now, my wife and I are watching The People versus OJ Simpson. Fascinating. Just, I was 8 when it happened. So like, I remember the Bronco on TV and that's it. And, you know, I remember some, maybe a Saturday Night Live skit when I was a little older with Judge Ito in it or whatever, but I think
that case went on for like 900 years. Didn't it?
So
it
was the jury was sequestered for like 6 or 8 months in a hotel. I would have been like, that's it. I'm out. Arrest me. I'd rather go to jail. You put me in a hotel for 8 months. They couldn't watch TV. Blockbuster was dropping videos off, and then they'd have to vote for which video they watched, and they all had to watch it together. Goodness. They were given newspapers with certain stories cut out because they couldn't have certain information, and the sheriffs would watch them. They couldn't go into each other. The last episode we watched was all about the jury sequestration, and I was like, what in the world? And it went on for months and months and months. Well, I didn't realize all of that, but you look at that, and there are people today that will say, beyond a shadow of a doubt, OJ did it, and there are still some people, the glove doesn't fit, you must acquit, you know, that kind of mentality. Will we ever know? I don't know. But when you look at that, even if he's guilty, I would rather live in a system where a guilty person occasionally gets off than an innocent person would ever get put in jail. And that's what I think the system that our founders tried to put in place. And the further you get towards the mob mentality, like we've had with so many of these cases where the media plays judge, jury, and executioner, before there's ever a trial or evidence presented, they just, oh, here's the video. That's it. It's over. And it's like, oh, hold on a second. What was the time frame? What happened here, here, and here? And we can think of several popular cases that have gone. And some conservatives liked the outcome and some that seems like a fair outcome, but I would have gone a different way. The truth is, though, that's how the justice system's supposed to work. And the scary thing is when you have kind of this, it's the mob in Rome is fickle, you know, and people are going,
I got my kill torch him. And pitchfork, right. Man. Yes, I'm ready.
And I don't want to live in a world that's run by the mob. That's why this whole argument around the filibuster right now, like, I don't want to live in a direct democracy, the electoral college. I don't want to live in that spot because sometimes we have to be saved from ourselves. And as frustrating as it is sometimes to win an election, but not have the power to enact your agenda because you don't have a carte blanche minority, that's a good thing because we don't live in a monarchy. Like, you don't just get to enact everything. I hate the executive orders. I hated it when Trump did it. I hated it when Obama did it. Hated it, any of them. Like, it's a legislate from the legislative branch, executive branch, execute the laws. Like, and so when I look at that, that to me fudges the whole system up and creates all kinds of holes for elections being stolen, conspiracy theories. Like, that's, it creates this huge gap that we have now because we don't trust anybody.
Right. But I started watching a show. I don't know if it's a show or a movie, but it was called Outlaw King. I don't know if you've seen it, but it sort of picks up the tale after William Wallace and that deal. And one of the scenes that got me, like, that I couldn't keep watching after it, was they took a guy and they hung and quartered them.
Yeah, drawn and quartered.
So they hung them up and then just opened them up.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. I was like, holy crap. Like, as much as I hate our justice system, when we slide through, what if that was your end and you had no say in it? You were just done.
Yeah. What's like, was it the Dark Knight or one of the Batmans where they're just dragging people before the tribunal, like guilty, and then just executing
right.
them. Like, is that the world that you want to live in? No, thank you.
Yeah. So we've come a long way. Exactly. Even if it's not perfect, it's right. at least better than that scenario.
Yeah.
All right. So here's one that we're gonna have a idiot's version of guilt or not.
Okay.
So we're gonna do the second half of this. So the Epstein deal,
yeah,
total chaos around that. But do you think hypothetically, if you had the people that were supposed to be the referees were part of that deal, mm-hmm. how much of the system would be there to exonerate or protect or condemn them in that system?
Well, he was very protected. I mean, the evidence is there that he was very protected in the deal that he got early on down in Florida, I think it was. He was very protected. He had lots of powerful people, obviously, on his Rolodex. There's no arguing that. They flew around on his jet. And, you know, as much as Bill Clinton says it was only four times, I think in court it was 23. So you look at some of those things and you see the names that are listed there and who was there and, you know, who he's had pictures with and all that. He was very well connected. So I don't buy for a second that he didn't get off that first time and he wasn't being protected throughout the whole thing. But then once he got caught and it seemed like he did not kill himself. Like I'm
for sure.
1000%.
But I got my pitchfork. And if somebody knows what this was, I expected to unravel and expose it all and get rid of all of those people. And that's what we're waiting for. And so, it's not happening.
Well, it's been slow. So Ghislaine Maxwell obviously had her case and they tried to make the case that her defense was essentially that, you know, she was a victim too, was essentially the case she tried to make. Nobody bought it. And for good reason. But then you have now, I don't know if you've seen this, but Prince Andrew,
mm-hmm.
he's now in a civil suit and some other stuff. And he tried to get some stuff thrown out and now that's being exposed. It feels slow, but I just really hope in the end justice is done.
Yeah. But that's if you trust that there are people in government in there that aren't going to be like, whoa, you know what? Let first year law guy, I'll take this from here. And then it just disappears forever. You got to think that if it's to that level where powerful people are going away, that they have enough control over the, you know, the enforcement side of this, that it just goes away.
Yeah. Well, see, I think there's a tension in the conspiracy theory. There's the levels to this. Cause I've heard people that are like, the government's running like a child sex trafficking ring and like, you know, sacrificing babies to Satan. Like I've seen people sent me YouTube videos and all sorts of stuff. And I'm like, okay. exactly what you're saying, like you have these powerful people that are on the line for this stuff. And so, you know, self-preservation and power is their thing.
For sure.
That's why many of them are in politics. They know how to save their own hide.
Right.
So you have these kind of moments where, yeah, you look at that. And so the truth is somewhere between sacrificing children to Satan and powerful people.
Really bad people that get away with it.
But what the media does is they point to the fringe crazies on the end and go, so obviously all of it's not true.
Yeah. And that's why it's hard to be a conspiracy theorist.
Correct.
Because you could be reasonable conspiracy theorist
right.
and still get cast in with the devil worshiping baby
exactly.
killers.
Exactly. And so it's like guys like, you know, Alex Jones and, you know, some of those guys that have gotten ripped off, you know, the internet. I mean, he's got his own kind of, you know, station or whatever, but some of those guys that people go, oh, well he's crazy. And you go back and look at some of the stuff he said is nuts. But some of it's been true. And like, so you go back and you look at some of that stuff and you go, well, he said this in 1990, whatever. And then we're sitting here in 2001, like sure as heck that happened. So, you know, yes. Is there certain things that are outlandish, certain things for click, certain things for that? Yes. Some of the guys and gals that do this, that's where they make their money. But they erode their own industry by doing that.
Right.
Because I'm like, well, you know, nobody wants to say they listen to Alex Jones because he's a crazy guy. But, you know, you look at some of that track record and you go, you know what? One or two of those things was super outlandish. And he probably said it that way to get clicks or he probably had a bad piece of information. But, you know, this 60% over here, he got that right and that right and that right. So, you know, and it's not an endorsement of Alex Jones. I just know he personifies kind of that conspiracy right. theory, crazy person. And, you know, so.
All right. Moon landing. Faked. Not faked.
There's too much motivation to fake it. I think we've been to the moon. I just think the first one, we had to beat Russia there. And so I just think there's too much there's too much motivation to fake it so that we can say we were there first.
Yeah, because it was a big marketing campaign.
Yes, huge marketing campaign. You know, people have gone back and analyzed the videos, and I've actually watched some YouTube videos on this, you know, late at night when I can't sleep. But you look at that, and there's too much governmental motivation, national pride to push that forward. Actually, I heard a conspiracy on this, that the reason Kennedy was assassinated was because he put them on the hook for going to the moon with his big "we're going to go to the moon" speech, and that they had been blowing smoke and weren't ready to do it, so they faked the moon landing and killed Kennedy so that they could stop. Because, you know, you remember, like, the space stuff pretty much stopped
right
in the 70s, well, early 80s.
Here's the upside here. The Artemis project is going to revisit the moon, and we need the first person to get there that we trust, so then they're not going to put a whole bunch of stuff out.
Right.
They're going to discover if we were there, right? Yeah. And if they weren't, then there won't be lunar modules, and there won't be golf balls, and there won't be all the other stuff that supposedly went up there. So I hope it's Elon, and he's got to tell me that somebody up there isn't like an actor or a stagehand or a prop manager.
That's true, because there should be stuff up there. But they'll probably say something along the lines that they don't find anything. They'll say, well, it was we miscalculated. It was the wrong side. You can see where they wiggle on this, right?
Yeah. Anyway, since you mentioned JFK, the JFK assassination being an inside job, whatever.
That's tough. Feelings. That's a fun one from like a movie standpoint. Like there's a couple of great movies made about it. And there's just a ton of information. I still don't understand. Trump was going to release all the documentation, and then he backed off.
Yeah.
Due to national security. Like, who are we protecting? It was 1963. Who's still alive? Who's still connected to what?
You release one of those and know what government's capable of concealing, and then the rest of it unwinds. So it's probably not a detail. It's probably just the fact that they could do it.
Yeah. So, it's certainly I don't think it was just some one-off in a building. I certainly think there was some sort of conspiracy. Now, whether that was the CIA, FBI, Russia, I mean, there's the mob. There's so many different rabbit trails that conspiracy theory goes down. But one guy did not just decide to grab his rifle and go up in a book tower and shoot it. And then magically the next day, the mob connected, you know, nightclub owner shoots him as he's being transferred before he has a chance to testify about anything. So I don't buy it.
All right, so the Clintonian murder spree, the trail of bodies. Oh,
they're dirty, bro. You think so? Oh, through and through.
You get them personally, or they just have a group of people that are capable of that kind of stuff?
Have you ever watched, or are you familiar with the background of House of Cards?
I watched a couple episodes, but
yeah. So that's the Clintons. Okay. Right. from what I know about the show, they just do everything for power, and it's real, like, just nasty stuff, and you're just watching it. I'm like, oh, this is like a true story, like, you know, like, and but some of that stuff is just brutal. But you look at, there's just too many of those. Like, are they just really that coincidental that this person, they fell off on a, you know, rock climbing accident, and that person too, and this person committed suicide, and all these
shooting themselves in the back of the head. You
know, it's like some of that stuff. It's like, all right, I get, yeah, sure. Could they have died in a rock climbing accident? Could they have committed suicide? Sure, but all of these people, like all these people that were connected to this thing, they all happen.
They have information on the Clintons. Oh, right. They died? Amazing.
And that's the whole thing with the Jeffrey Epstein stuff. It's like nobody.
It's that group, though. Like, if you notice, they keep reappearing as the dirty people that always have a way of concealing their misdeeds. Yeah, or whatever.
You couldn't pay me to be in that sphere.
All right, Area 51.
I think there's certainly military stuff going on, science stuff. I wouldn't be surprised if they had some tech running there that we didn't know about, whether it's extraterrestrial or not. It's a cool story. Maybe. I don't know. What do you think?
The likelihood of us being alone here is very, you know, mathematically, you know, it's probably, you know, it's probably happened where we probably have had visits. And again, if the government conceals something from us when they have, you know, the stage to do it on, you know, technologically more advanced people than us could probably conceal themselves as well. So I give it about a 90% chance.
Okay.
Yeah, it's up there.
I mean, you've seen the documentary. There's several of them. And the one that Will Smith is in,
Now, the other side of that is just like the space program was great marketing. What you mentioned, if you've got tech going on and you want to keep people captivated on some kind of your own conspiracy theory about aliens, I mean, that gives you some cover fire.
Yeah. So do you do Bigfoot?
Bigfoot. Oh, interesting. Okay. So the oceans are a big one with me where, you know, we think we've explored all corners of this, not even close. Like we're not even there. So could there be places that are species of different things that we don't know about and that are pretty good at evading us? Absolutely. Amazon jungle, South America, you know,
species being discovered, for new flowers, all that stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, I think maybe half of it is people playing it up that, you know, it's for fun. We considered throwing on an ape suit and running parallel to the freeway just to see how many calls we could generate. But
I'm sure the police would love that.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
So if that happens, Joe Danier
or Bob gets up on his thing and takes a shot at me, right?
That it is Ohio.
I killed Bigfoot. Oh, poor Joe. Yeah. How stupid is him? Nessie. Might as well go there.
So there's actually several large lakes that have monsters, for lack of a better term. Lake Champlain up on the border of New York and Vermont has Champy, and it's a very similar Loch Ness style monster. Obviously, Loch Ness, and you have other lakes that have stuff like that. I don't see why not in the terms of, you know, could it be this? Could it be that? Sure. But, you know, some of these lakes are deep. And just like you're saying with the ocean, like you get down into some of those spaces in the ocean and some of these lakes that go down for a mile or 2 miles, like crazy deep. Why not?
Yeah. I mean, you go on a cruise ship for like one time and you know that this place is just as deep as it is wide. And we just don't have, like, we're going on a full on surface and we're not hitting even part of it, you know? So
it's an illustration I often use, you know, talking to people about God, because they'll, so, well, we don't know this, we don't know that. I'm like, yeah, but like you've been to the ocean. Like you can walk out in the water and go, yeah, it's wet, sandy, salty. Like you know certain things about it, but you're never going to know the full depths of who he is. And, you know, the same thing's true, I think, of our oceans. I don't think we'll ever fully explore the oceans, the galaxy, any of that stuff.
All right. We're getting through these conspiracy theories pretty good. I just had one. Do you have any more that you can think of?
So in New Jersey, they have the Jersey Devil.
Okay.
It's a little weird, and no, I don't buy it, but you know, they have the cranberry bogs and they have the pine barrens, and supposedly there is a devil that lives in the pine barrens, and they tell you that as kids to
these species things are all have possibility, and, sure. And same thing with chupacabra is the same thing, where it's probably some kind of diseased other species or one we haven't discovered.
So you do the you've done some of the ghost hunting and stuff that. So what do you do you know, some of the ghost stuff? Yes, no, do you think it's BS?
Well, I think our brains are so powerful, we create a lot of it. And like when people are out on the ocean and they see things like mermaids and they see things like Nessie, their brain's constructing that based on the information. So you get low light, you get, you know, seasick, you get lack of food or disease or sickness, lots of alcohol, and you can see some crazy stuff. All right, next one. I'm gonna group these together. So like secret societies, Illuminati's, all that kind of stuff, controlling factors
on it's been happening forever. I mean, just take a history book. There have been secret society backdoor stuff going on for millennia.
Now, do you think they're nefarious, or do you think they're controlling things like banking was the big one, or conquering?
You know, I think there's always an angle and there's an advantage to being a part of them for people in power. But you certainly have those secret societies. You certainly have some that are very, you know, the Masons and others that are very open and upfront. But there's certainly an element to them that is very secretive. And I just there's too much history where you look at and go, oh, you know, that was a secret society, and then it gets exposed, or you find documentation on it, or whatever. So yes, I think it's all there. Whether it's nefarious or not, I don't know. What do you think?
I just think it's so hard to keep things concealed. I can see how governments can do it, but I think in plain, it's really tough for anybody not to talk about their crap, and so to have regular people that
they
are
just kill you.
That,
we talk about
that's how it works.
That's how it works, Joe. You talk.
I gotta pay attention to the news a little bit more. People are dropping off the face of the earth.
But think about it. In all seriousness, I had the opportunity on my other podcast. We didn't get to release the episode because there was some sensitive information in it. But we interviewed a pastor who's the son of a Mexican cartel person. But he got out, got into witness protection. And that's why we couldn't release the episode. And hearing some of the stories and stuff like that, like, you keep your mouth shut or you die. So, like, there are just some of those things, you know, if the cartels can pull that off, why couldn't another secret society do that?
Yeah. And you get it to the point where Epstein and Illuminati are synonymous. You get to that level of power where you're untouchable, you're protected. And then it ends up going in the way that's not noble. It ends up going that other direction, whatever that is. Yeah. So if you're in banking and you're in total control of it, nobody can catch you do anything. Are you enriching yourself or are you taking care of the poor?
Sure. Yeah.
Illuminati is not synonymous with taking care of the poor.
Illuminati, the Bilderbergs,
right.
You know, the Rothschild, I mean, all of that stuff is kind of lumped in the same kind of category. And sure. Do I think people that run in those circles are going to hang out with people in those circles? Yeah. Do I think they make some backroom deals and stuff? Sure. Is it nefarious? And is it like, hey, we're getting together to conquer the world? Maybe. I don't know.
I've been around a lot of powerful people, even in this area, and I have seen way more than I want to see. And that's why I don't trust because the way that you hope that it is. And then when you see it, like, there's not been a single instance where I walked into without knowing and been impressed with how clean it really was. Mm. Not a single time.
That's how it's the always sausage, like, is made, is what they say.
Yeah. Right.
It's true.
So,
what other ones you got? You said you had a couple.
But the Illuminati and those
kind of secret societies. Yeah. How about 9/11?
That's a
big one. I mean, you can go on YouTube. They've made full documentaries about the buildings were exploded from the inside.
I think any major play, the powerful people knew it was coming. Even if it was something that they would have stopped if they could, I think they knew that it was about to happen, and we just didn't. Because think about how much energy they put in not creating panic, right? So that if you don't want to create panic.
Or how much they put into creating panic.
Well, slow release panic instead of like, running with hair.
Fear
on fire.
Porn, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so the 9/11, those documentaries are obviously, they're well put together. It's very fascinating, the 9/11 Commission, all of that. There's room. And that's what, people, for me, I like George W. Bush. Like, he just seems like a good guy. We have a family friend, it's on Sam's side, that is in the Secret Service, and he spends 3 months at the White House, 3 months at wherever, traveling with the president, the first family. And he's been doing that since either Clinton's or Bush's. And he can never disclose details or any of that stuff, but it'll be like, you know what? They're really as nice as they seem, or they come across nice on camera, but they are jerks behind the scene.
Right.
He had some interesting stuff to say about Mrs. Clinton. So that was ducking cover when she came down the hall, bro.
Yeah.
He didn't want to be caught in the crossfire. So, but you look at, stuff like that. And, because I kind of feel like, you look at George W. Bush, and seems like a nice guy from Texas. And, would he plan something like that? I have a hard time believing. So I'm okay with the current government narrative on that one, even if it makes me a sucker.
Yeah. So when you watch those 9/11 deals, and they start doing the science, and then they start sharing the reason, where are you 50%, 90%?
They raise great questions. They talk about the metal being melted, and that jet fuel only burns at a certain temperature. In order for them to have melted the way they did, it would have had to have burned considerably higher than it could scientifically. So they raise some great questions where you're like, but to me, then it comes back to what's the play?
If you plot either war or disaster on a timeline, and you try to take like how often something gets delivered to us, it's pretty regimented.
Oh, yeah.
Where there's always a vacuum of some kind of semblance of peace, and it always gets replaced by a something. So the conspiracy of who's melding that together, is it because the vacuum is just coincidental that we've had some peace and then boom, war, had some peace and then, oh, pandemic and whatever.
Yeah, I forget what the cycle was, but we, you know, we had a president, you know, assassinated every, I don't know what it was, 40 years, 60 years or whatever, up until 2000 or 2010, whatever it was. You know, you had Kennedy being the last one. You had the Reagan attempt, and a guy threw a shoe at George W. Bush.
Right, I remember
and,
that.
Yeah, he dodged that thing. Like, you know, Norm MacDonald did a whole comedy bit on this. And he said, could you imagine Joe Biden trying to avoid that shoe? Take that thing in the face, he'd be dead, laid out on the floor. And he's like, George W. Bush dodged that thing like a boxer was ready to go. It was pretty funny. So obviously, you know, you start getting into more of the modern stuff. You know, people make arguments about, you know, weapons of mass destruction and all of that. You know, do you think there's a, you know, so there's even one with everything that we're dealing with the with what's going on in our current world today.
Did you like how I did that? Naming the, those who
you know, they've put out documentaries saying it was planned.
Course.
And so there's theories around why to do that and how to do that. And you look at some of these other countries and what's going on in Australia, New Zealand, wherever, and it's like, whoa. I mean, like concentration camp stuff. It's crazy town.
Yes, it is.
And so, you know, are people that afraid? Or, you know, some of that stuff is infrastructure stuff. It had to have been like set up beforehand, which is where people run with that. What other ones you got?
So I guess when they had those riots around the country, there were like pallets of bricks delivered for the riots. And do you think it was, you know, the people being, what do they call those when the CIA, they act, those actors come in and try to get, I forget what those are called.
I'm very interested. You know, everybody's made a ton out of, on the right, they've made a ton out of the summer riots. On the left, they made a huge deal out of January 6th. My opinion, both were not good things. But I'm so curious on both fronts how much the government had actors and people in play for those things. I think it's fascinating that with some of the January 6th stuff, we don't have all the information. Like Nancy Pelosi's not releasing her communiques. Like, why not? Like, you're in charge of the Capitol Police. Why weren't there more? Like, people want answers to those questions. You're just like, no.
And feeds the conspiracy
And then it feeds the conspiracy theory. So, you know, do I think that she, you know, was dropping bricks off? No, but like, just release your communiques and everybody will know that, okay, yeah, this was terrible and horrible. But then when you don't do that, everybody goes, well, wait a second. And it's the same thing with, you know, everything that happened over the 2020 summer. Everybody looks at that and they go, oh, you know, all right, I kind of understand the protesting. I kind of understand, like, you look at it from that standpoint, but then all of a sudden, I think some of that's just opportunism of some of these groups like Antifa and others that just saw an opportunity to create chaos and did it. Now, whether there was a broader, larger puppet master, I don't know.
So here's what I hope we never get to. So you have sort of two rule sets, and this is sort of in computers, so that when you're setting up like firewalls and mail servers, you have two choices. You have a whitelist model and a blacklist model. Mm. The whitelist model means that you trust everything and you create rules to see if you should distrust.
Okay.
And a blacklist model means that you distrust everything by default and you have to elevate to be able to trust.
Mm.
And so conspiracy theorists are usually on the, I hate them all, right?
Right.
I distrust all of them. And there's a couple of them that have defied my default distrust and elevated themselves to be trustworthy, but 99% of them are going to break the law, be bad people and whatever. And I'm going to tag them right from the get-go.
Sure.
So which in this culture right now, which do you think is the safer player? If you were to give advice, Charlotte, to take on the world, is she the optimistic trust and then
trust but verify. Right, President Reagan had it. And that's wisdom. And he was dealing with the Kremlin. I mean, he was dealing with communist Russia and, you know, putting that statement out there. Hey, like trust, but verify, you know, I've watched a couple of historical documentaries in my time. My wife would say too many, but when he gave that famous speech, Mr. Gorbachev, tear down that wall, and he's in East or West Germany there, he's making that speech. You know, every advisor told him, you cannot say that phrase here. They were like, absolutely not. They wrote it out of his speech. Mr. President, do not do that. And in the moment he did it, and it's the line everybody remembers him by, and it was the beginning of the fall of the Soviet Union. So, but you look at that and the actors he was dealing with, you know what? All right, I'll take you at your word, but I'm gonna inspect what you're saying you're going to do. And if you're not going to do that, well, then we can't play. Right. And I think that's true. You know, on a very basic level, you do that with employees, right? You bring them in. Oh, you know, I can do this and da 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 da. I just saw a TikTok. The punter for the Indianapolis Colts for years, Pat McAfee, told this great story. So the short version is he was a soccer player and went to a kicking camp, and he outkicked everybody. They were like, man, you're really good. Come on back. They have him come back, and he has to kick off against this other guy and after another camp, and gets called out. Penn State doesn't offer him a scholarship. They give it to this other guy, but he ends up going to another kicking camp, and West Virginia signs him. He goes and becomes a kicker in college, gets drafted by the Colts as a punter. One of the things punters have to do is they have to hold for the field goal kicker and stuff like that. So they take the snap and they got to put the ball down. And coach asked him, like, in his interview and stuff, have you ever held it? Oh, I held all the time. He had never held before. So he gets there, and he has to hold for Adam Vinatieri, who's one of the famous kickers of the NFL. And Vinatieri asks him, have you ever held? He's like, absolutely not. And so he sent him to a holding camp that actually taught him how to hold. And he's like, you know, my first year, we go to the Super Bowl. It was like, you know, really cool year. Well, in the off season, Vinatieri gets hurt, and they bring in this other kicker, which was the guy that Penn State gave the scholarship to. And he was a lefty, and he had a hold for him. He goes, I just learned how to hold for a righty. And he goes, so this poor guy's coming in for a trial. I think he went like 1 for 10. And he goes, I'm trying to put the ball down for him and everything. And it was just horrible because of me, not because of him. And he goes, but I was really trying my best. And it was a great story. But in that sense, it's like, you know, your employees can come in and they can interview real well. Right. I'm sure you've had some of those. They have great resumes or recommendations, and then they show up and can't do the job that they purported to be able to do. Right. And you have to trust them to an extent, but then you got to verify, okay, you said you could do this. Why did that take you 3 hours? Well, I had to watch 2 YouTube videos because I didn't really know what I was doing. And okay, you figured it out though. And you know, like there's an element to that. So I think that's the way, you know, in just about, any circle is probably the best approach for an optimist, because I think that's the only way to go.
All right. So I'm going to ask you this last one, but I not Preacher Doug has to answer this one. It's got to be, I don't know who's got to answer it. But so the Mayan ends of the world, you know,
they just ran out of space.
That's it.
It's on a big wheel, and they got to the end. I think it was a Far Side, or there was a comic that was drawn right as 2012 was coming up, and this Mayan guy with a, you know, chisel or whatever, and he goes, man, this is really going to freak somebody out one day. End of the world narratives have happened
even forever. In religious circles, there have absolutely been people predicting that. Oh, this, yeah, is it. Like, I see the signs. Got the message.
Absolutely. People predicted that. I mean, as a matter of fact, the early apostles all thought Jesus was going to come back in their lifetime. Luke writes the Gospel of Luke, right? And he puts it out, and he writes it like a Greek trilogy. So when you read the beginning of Luke, he writes to Dear Theophilus, and Theophilus is like a pen person, it means lover of God. So anybody who loves God, here, I'm writing this to you. And he tells you right in the beginning, I set out to give an orderly account. He interviewed people. He got documentation. Luke was a doctor, so he was educated. And so he puts together, and it's one of the reasons I like his gospel, because it's very methodical. It's laid out that way, where the others are more Eastern in their approach. He's very laid out, a little more Western in his approach, in my opinion. And so, but he writes that, and then he writes Acts. And when you read the book of Acts, it's the Acts of the church. And so he writes about this beautiful kingdom and the church starting and everything. And you get to Acts 28, and it's just like, it falls off a cliff. And you're like, because he thought that he was going to write a third part about Christ's return and kingdom set up on earth, and everybody died. So wow. it just ends in Acts 28. Even the early apostles, when Jesus multiple times, his disciples ask him, well, is this the time you're going to set up the kingdom, and this is where we're going to like kick butt? And he's like, how long am I going to be with you guys? Like, you know, even when he's getting ready to ascend into heaven in Acts chapter one, they're asking about times and hours and like, you know, is this when you're going to do this? And he's like, look, it's not for you to know the dates or times, but the way you see me go is the way you're going to see me return. So that's been a part of not just Christianity, but I think every religion, and even in a secular way, you know, an asteroid's going to hit, or, you know, a scientific way, we're going to get a pandemic is going to wipe everybody out. Like there are those, I think the History Channel a few years back did, was it called A World Without People or something like that? And they, 10 years after people, 20 years after people, this is what would happen. And
I think humanity does this with everything. I watch a lot of professionals, especially when they get the latter parts of their career, they're at the top of their game. When they get towards the end and they start losing their charisma or their appearance or whatever, they start stressing out and they almost like hope the game ends before they lose all of their muster. So I think they look towards the exit while they're still in, you know, good shape. So maybe a lot of those people are a little hopeful that, you know, we've been holding this roof a lot and it's really heavy and I hope somebody comes down and takes this off of me.
Yeah.
And nobody's coming. So,
Well,
that was a long one, man. We went on.
It was good. Next week, we'll do something productive like NFTs. So if you want to know about Loch Ness Monster and stuff like that, watch this episode. Otherwise, join us next week and we'll talk about crypto and NFTs.
Oh, I love us.
Thank you for listening to this show on Youngstown Studio. If you like our programming, we invite you to subscribe to our YouTube channel, follow our Facebook page, or subscribe to your favorite podcast platform like iTunes or Spotify. This is original Youngstown content, and we would appreciate you sharing the videos and the word about us. Thank you.